on the banks of the Grand River, high above the Alora Gorge. This is the Buzzer Podcast. Indie music, new releases, industry insiders, out-of-the-box conversations with guests from the true north, from the west coast to the east coast to across the pond, and from down under. And now, here is Shay.
Hey, Shay here, On Air Indie. Welcome and enjoy episode 28, first music history boil down for March 18th. In 2017, Chuck Berry died at age 90. The American guitarist, singer, and songwriter was a pioneer of rock and roll music, with songs such as Maybelline in 1955, Roll Over Beethoven, 1956, Rock and Roll Music in 1957, and Johnny B. Goode in 1958, Berry refined and developed rhythm and blues into the major elements that make rock and roll distinctive. Today we have West Yorkshire band Echo Violet, the four-piece alternative rock band formed in 2019. Band members James Whiteley and Rowan Minnis join us today. Welcome, James and Rowan. Thanks for coming on today.
Oh, thanks for having us, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
And it's great with this age of technology that you can have a one-to-one across the pond.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Very cool. Yeah.
So how far is Bradford out of the busy London music scene?
It's about, I'd say it's probably 200 miles. I don't know what that would be in kilometres. It's easily 300 kilometres, I'd say, from London. We're much further north than London. So, we're not too far from Leeds. I don't know if any of the viewers would know Leeds. That's the city we're closest to.
Bradford. Manchester as well. Oh, that's quite well known. We're not too far from there.
Yeah. Oh, dear to my heart. I was interviewing another UK artist and I forgot where my grants came from. But he was from Manchester.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're not too far.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sort of a Heinz 57. I have Manchester, Britain, me. I have Walsh in me. Don't hold that against me. Because that's where we get our temper. And the rest French, French-Canadian, and some from Paris. So I'm a real Heinz 57. Anyways, so thank you for bringing your music onto the podcast. I'm really impressed with you guys. You must have started at some point that's an important date for you. Like, when did you first decide that this is something you wanted to do full time?
I think for me, music was listening to a lot of 70s, 60s, and 70s bands.
Do you want to take that one, James?
A lot of the guitar for me, it was a lot of the guitar playing stuck out from a lot of records from that sort of era, which my parents listened to a lot. And I think that stuck with me. And in time, the more I picked up guitar, and then I think the more and more I got into that sort of music, the more I really, really wanted to, take music more seriously and really, really push to work on songwriting, pick up. I joined a choir because I wanted to become a more proficient singer, and obviously kept up with my guitar playing. It's just a mixture of a lot of the music that I growing up, and me sort of messing around trying to come up with music that sounded similar. That's what sort of gave me the momentum, I think.
So you got your formal training in choir?
To a degree, I suppose. I did do music at school, but I didn't do it at college, I didn't do it at university. So it was, in a way, it was probably as well as I've had some piano lessons as well. I'd say that the choir has probably been the most I've had in terms of music lessons. I took guitar lessons as well, but again, that wasn't quite as formal.
So who of the 70s bands do you like to emulate after in terms of guitar? Page, Hendrix?
Hendrix, Pink Floyd for me, yeah, of that generation. Obviously, Hendrix was a bit earlier in the 60s, but yeah, and I think as well, bands like Cream, that was more 60s as well, wasn't it? That kind of thing. I think then, years on, my taste changed. I still love that stuff, but then got into other types of music as well. But for me, that kind of Pink Floyd, I think AC/DC were probably the first band I really got into as a when I was a teenager. I guess that sort of era of thing, and then I think Pink Floyd became the big thing for me years later, and that sort of guitar playing that I really wanted to emulate.
So it's Dark Side of the Moon, what bought you in?
Yeah. Wish You Were Here is one of my absolute favourites. The Wall as well.
That's the
operatic element of that I always really find interesting. Animals, that was another one that's not as well known. That's a brilliant album. But I think...
Yeah, pretty cool. And what about you, Rowan?
For me, there's always... I've got quite a musical family. My dad plays a lot of folk music, so I've always grown up hearing, live music just in the house on acoustic, and always had guitars lying around. So I suppose that's how I got introduced to playing the guitar, just from having them lying around and noodling on them. I also never had, unlike James, I didn't have any guitar lessons. So in terms of theory, that's not really my area, but I've just got into music from just hearing my dad play and thinking, oh, that'd be quite cool to be able to do.
Sometimes you just have a skill for it, just actually growing up with it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it really helps getting into it at a younger age. For me, when I started taking it more seriously, it was probably a little bit later on. I think I was 15 when I started thinking, right, I'm going to try and take learning guitar more seriously. I've just been trying to get better ever since then, really.
So how did the band form?
Yeah, I mean, me and James, we actually went to the same school, secondary school, although we weren't in any of the same classes, but we kind of knew each other. And then after school, we bumped into each other in a local shop, and we always talked about it at school because I knew James played guitar and he knew I played guitar. We always talked about having a jam, but we never did. And then when we bumped into this shop probably 2017, we said, it's 2018. We said, oh, why don't we just have that jam that we said we were always going to have at school? And I think we arranged it just for like the week after meeting. James brought along his friend, who's also called James, to make things more confusing. And we had a jam in Leeds, at a place called Blueberry Hill Studios, which is quite well known in Leeds for people rehearsing. And we had a really good time, and everything it flowed really well. And we just decided, right, that's been really fun. Why don't we start a band? So that's where it started, I guess, wasn't it, James?
Yeah, I think, and I remember that I was remembering that session. We just decided, okay, why don't we just? I think didn't we pick about three or four, a couple of songs each? And I remember there was a Beatles song that we did. This was just to kind of get the ball rolling, really. We thought we'll turn up to the, a few songs that we all know. I think we did I think we did Knocking on Heaven's Door, didn't we? Because that's a very simple song.
Yeah, I remember that one, yeah.
I was really not used to doing vocals at that point. I'd never sung in a band. I'd only sung in a choir. So, but I sort of just thought, what the hell, see how it goes. If we feel like we need a, if we feel like we, it's not working and we need to get someone else on doing.
Yeah, so that's a good point in that. Yeah, because I remember when we first started the band, James, we never sort of officially said, oh, James is going to be the singer. I think it was just more of a sense of, we kind of just thought about, oh, let's just give it a go. And James has just been getting better and better as a singer and developing his sound and over the past few years since we started the band.
So your four piece, Charlotte and Nels on drums and George Gale on bass.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, we did originally have James, because we just mentioned, as Rowan mentioned, James Brickles. But he got really busy with a new job, and he had some other projects going on as well. So he left us last. When was it now? Was it very early? Was it last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was early last year.
Yeah. And then George came along after that.
Unfortunately, he joined just before COVID hit, which was not the best time to be joining a new band.
Yeah, I saw that timing. The reason I asked is because I saw a change. It's pretty cool that you have a lady on drums. That's awesome.
Yeah. It is a different dynamic. It's I'm just trying to think of how the story in terms of how we. I think we put an ad up, because obviously this kind of links back to what Rowan was saying in terms of the starting of the band. Obviously we got, there was myself, Rowan, and at the time James on bass, but of course we then needed to find a drummer. So I think we put an online ad out, didn't we, I think? And I can't remember which website it was, but before too long, Charlotte then got in contact, didn't she? And we had a few drinks at a pub that we were a bar that was local to us, and then we had her in. So I think she might have done a rehearsal. She didn't really audition, did she? But she came in, and obviously joined. After that point.
We met for a drink, and we all got along, which is obviously important when you're starting a band. And then we had a jam after that, and Charlotte just did really well. She hadn't been in a band before this point, but she just had lots of enthusiasm and passion, which is the most important thing. She's great on the drums.
Yeah, she definitely adds to the music, I would honestly say. That's why I wanted to give her a shout-out. So the band was involved in 2019. You reached the finals of the Bingley Weekender Battle of the Bands, which is a huge music festival. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Well, it was our first. That was our first gig, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah.
Really?
It was the first gig we did. Yeah, it was. So it was pretty nerve wracking. I remember being the first time I'd ever really sung in a band to a crowd. So I was really nervous. I don't know about everybody else. I guess everybody was a bit, because it was the first one we'd done as a band. But it was. That was really fun. I think that what I found really fun about that was that it was all original bands. Because sometimes that you find if you're an original band and you're playing with a covers band, it's very hard to compete in the sense that the audience already knows usually if it's very popular cover songs. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to get an interaction in the same way as it is if you're with other originals bands, which is why I just remember that festival being really, really fun.
Everyone were there to hear new original music, weren't they? So it was just a really good, vibe there, definitely. And we were lucky to, we just released, we hadn't even officially released Hint, our first single, I think, at that point, or we just released it, and so we were able to use that to apply to get into the Battle of the Bands competition, which if we didn't have that, you needed it to show a song you'd recorded, and they liked that single, and then we got through the audition stage. But we're all really pleased with how we did in that competition to get to the finals.
Yeah, definitely. Now knowing that it was your debut concert, that's amazing. That's amazing. You also, MA's Records are picked you up for their A&R development
program. Mass Records. Obviously UK based. I don't know exactly where they.
I think they're international as well. I think they're international, but yeah, it's an artist development program. They've worked with quite a few big bands as well that have started there and gone on to do big things.
It's been really useful in terms of the promotion aspect of it, because that's something that I had very little knowledge about. So it's good to get obviously people who are in the know and that kind of thing to be able to guide you. It's been really useful, and it's. So it's been a bit of a shame in the sense that obviously what's happened with COVID has made it difficult in some ways, because you know the program under normal circumstances would involve us doing more gigs, would involve us doing more recording sessions, which has had to be put on hold for the time being. But there's still the experience that they can offer, and the guidance as well has been really valuable.
That's outstanding. It's probably a great feeling that an industry insider has picked you guys up and decided they want to work with you. That's a pretty good coup.
Yeah, definitely. Of course, yeah.
And they also offer free rehearsal practices, which helps as well. Just allows us to save a bit of our own money to put towards other things, such as...
Are they located where you are?
They're Bradford? Located in Leeds, so it's but it's not too far.
In Leeds,
It's just the city next to ours, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, they have an active music scene, from what I've heard from the people I know there.
They do, yeah. There's a lot of there's been quite a lot of venues at Leeds that have really popular. I think people knew about the Cockpit, didn't they? That's unfortunately closed down now, but that was one of the sort of the big ones in Leeds. But Leeds has always had a big music scene, hasn't it?
A lot of big bands come from there, such as like the Kaiser Chiefs and stuff.
I'm sure that'll open back up everything. Well, we're going to be talking and listening to The City of Impunity, which released last year in December. Listening to that, and the reason I asked you about your influence, and I was surprised that you didn't say this band. When I heard that song, all I had was The Who feel. It reminded me of The Who, my generation.
That's interesting.
Like, it just gave me those feels that I'm going, that's what I had to, that's what I wanted to confirm. It was recorded in 2019, though?
Yeah, we sort of had the demo for the track was done in 2019, which we had, we'd done our guitars on, and we'd recorded the guitars for the demo on that. But it was 2020, we started adding more bits on, such as the drums and the really professionally recorded bass and the better vocals. But yeah, the song was we had a demo of the song recorded in 2019.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I think we it's one of those, I think that Rowan and myself, we recorded the guitars on our own, didn't we? I think.
Well, it's well done. I love it. I love it. It's going to be on my personal playlist. I'll be honest with you. And the lyrics, because I always go to the lyrics because I'm a writer, okay? The lyrics, you mentioned the smell of vanilla. Are you referencing the older generation there?
No, that lyric came from a Nick Cave song. I'm a huge fan of Nick Cave, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. I'm just trying to think of the song for that one. That was it. Yes, I've got it. Yeah, I did make a note of it. Yeah, Do You Love Me Part 2, which is on the right at the end of the Let Love In album, which was, I think, a brilliant album. So I think lyrically, he's Nick Cave is one of my biggest influences. And that line, yeah, that the sort of spoken word bit was inspired by a couple of Nick Cave songs, actually. One called Mermaids from his recent album, Push the Sky Away, came out in 2013, I think. And then also the idea, I think the sort of dystopian nature and lyric subject just came from listening to Rowan's original demo. It just sounded like quite an angry song to me. This was before there were any words on it, of course, before I put any lyrics on it. But just listening to the music just pushed me into that sort of kind of a idea of a dystopian nightmare. That sort of thematic, there was that sort of thematic element to it. And then as well, going back to the Pink Floyd influence, a bit of Run Like Hell from The Wall, I think, came into that one as well with the, you better run idea.
Yeah.
it was a combination of influence from, Nick Cave, a little bit of, there was a book called The God of Small Things as well, where there was a very similar phrase used, which is an Anne Hattie Roy book, which came out, I think it was sort of the late 90s. And I remember reading that at school and I thought it was really interesting. And there was a really horrible thing happens to a child in a theater. And later on, because I was thinking of that Nick Cave reference, I remembered that novel as well. And so those lines came from those two sources.
Oh, because anybody listens to music, they have their own experiences and everything. Okay, and that's how they sort of figure out a song. Because the song is about, it's such a disjointed society about people you better fit in and trying to fit in. And it's just
that's one of the good things.
A lot of chaos and the smell of vanilla. I can tell you why I thought that is my grandmother, who was from Britain. That's what she wore as a perfume.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And it is the most vivid memory I have of her. Mm. So, I was watching the video and I thought, wow, maybe that's a reference to the older generation, like the way they judge you. And
that's really interesting.
Maybe I went too far with analyzing the lyrics, but that's what I got.
I'll say your lyrics do leave a lot up to people's interpretations, though, in my opinion, don't they, James?
That's what's always really interesting, isn't it? Anyone's that interpretation, it's one of those things that I didn't have that in my mind, but the Nick Cave or Anne Hattie Roy, that might have been what they were thinking when they came up with a similar kind of line, and I was using it slightly perhaps differently, but that interpretation makes total sense, and I'll probably think of it like that now.
I'm glad to give you my artistic opinion.
I tend to write less from, I don't know, I tend to put myself as a character in a situation and witnessing the world rather than, I suppose I do write from this, in inverted commas, the gut sometimes, but I tend to, I don't know, when I approach some music to write lyrics, it's usually not really personal to me in the sense that I often sort of cast myself as a kind of character member in a plot, the plot being the piece of music that I'm getting immersed in and trying to write lyrics to. I think that's why, like Ron says, I think that tends to be fairly ambiguous very often, and I quite like that. I think I'm a really big fan of Leonard Cohen, and his lyrics are like that. They're very ambiguous. Yeah, so you don't always listen to Leonard Cohen song, and you don't immediately always understand exactly where he's coming from. But the fact that you don't always understand that makes it more compelling, I often find. So,
Yeah, definitely. I'm a big believer in the power of lyrics and power of words. And I tend to favor bands such as your South Echo Violet that put a lot of thought and I guess imagery into the lyrics. I'm very impressed. Very impressed. So we're going to hear City of Immunity right now. Well, that's a great track, guys. I really do love it. I enjoyed the video. Who helped you with the video production?
The video was made by a local guy. The name of his production company is called Sleep All Day Productions. And he does really cool, sort of trippy, psychedelic, lo-fi 80s styled videos, which we just thought would really work for City of Impunity with that kind of dystopian feel that it had to the song. He also does really creative stuff for people on a budget as well, which we are at the moment. So I just came across him one day and I just really liked his stuff, showed it to the guys and thought, oh, you know what, his stuff would work really well for City of Impunity. And we contacted him and he liked the track and in a way it's almost like it's a lyric video really, an animated lyric video, but we really like what he came up with.
Yeah, he did very well, and he also did the video for the next song that we're going to hear, Come Back Home. That was an outstanding video. To me, a lot of the imagery was very Picasso-like.
All right, that's interesting. In terms of the, do you mean lyrically?
Lyrically, and I'm talking about the visual of the video. I also noticed in the notations you say it was recorded at the Echo Violet Bat Cave. What is
that? Yeah, I can't remember what song we put that down for, but that's because a lot of the instruments we record, such as the bass and the electric guitars, we did My Old House, which I guess in my head was the Echo Violet Bat Cave.
But it was all a bit Heath Robinson, wasn't it, in how we put it all together. Some of the songs were, especially with lockdown as well, we've had to be a bit more experimental in terms of how we've recorded certain things. Quite a bit of it, most of it we've done all the drums and all the bass just about at Prospect Studios in Bradford, which is a really good place to, it's a really good recording studio. But yeah, I think that one was, because we were sort of putting it together around about lockdown. So we've had to be a little bit makeshift in terms of where we've been able to record things. So I think the guitar solo for that was done in my parents' shed.
Oh, awesome.
my mum and dad have it's a shed, but they call it a summer house. And I needed somewhere to...
How British!
I know, very British, isn't it? So it was recorded in the summer house, put a couple of amps together and hope that...
That's
the
solo
there,
for Come Back Home, isn't it?
In
your parents' shed. Yeah. So it sounds also great, so maybe we should record in the shed more often.
Yeah, so tell me a bit about the song.
Maybe that's the secret for the ambience of it. Yeah, well, this one started off as a demo that I had for quite a few years before I got in contact with Rowan again. So it's probably a few years before that, maybe 2015. And it had a few different variations in it I think we all got together and structured it a bit better, because it went through numerous different forms before we...
Yeah, it has changed shape quite a lot in terms of the style of it, hasn't it? It was a bit jazzy in places in the past.
I think then we sort of stripped some of that away and then put the acoustic guitar down, which I think opens the song quite well. And the... Obviously, then we put... There's quite a lot of sound effects on that one as well, which I sort of comes to... I listen to a lot of soundscape music and a lot of music with film. I can't think of the word. what's it called? Music that goes along with a film soundtrack. That's the word I'm looking for. So I listen to a lot of soundtrack music, and I think that's where the radio idea came for that one at the start, with the radio sort of coming in and out and then the acoustic guitar coming in. But the song itself was, it just seemed to, when we sort of, before I wrote the lyrics, by the time we sort of got the structure down, it just seemed to point towards being a song about war somehow. And so I just started writing a verse, and the first verse, and there was something in me writing the first verse that reminded me of a line from a John Lennon song, Working Class Hero. There was a line about on there about it was something along the lines of the man on the hill sort of.
Yeah, I was going to point out that lyric.
Yeah, and that's what that came. Yeah, that just that lyric from Working Class Hero just sparked an image in my mind then of somebody like a general sort of figure wanting barking orders at soldiers to make them walk across the walk across into no man's land, and that then sparked the whole idea of the verses being from the perspective of a soldier or soldiers. Or somebody sort of commenting on what's going on in a war situation, and then the choruses were seemed to make sense that the chorus was from the perspective of a loved one at home, somebody wanting their son to come back from the trenches.
Well, your lyrics created a tremendous imagery. The specific lyric I was going to mention was signed by those in the hill.
And
a man or a soldier walking up the hill, a suicidal almost.
Yeah, yeah. Charge of the light, really kind of.
Says without a gun. So it's like he had no control over his death.
Yeah, that was what I was aiming for with that. Sort of Charge of the Light Brigade kind of interpretation, I think. Yeah.
Well, you did very well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think the music, even if you listen to the song without music, without lyrics, I think it... There are certain things, because it is quite an anthemic song in its structure. I just think it sort of... That sort of style of narrative and that theme seemed to just come to me on that song. And I think we added some of the little touches, like in the bridge, the sound of an empty gun cartridge landing on the floor, just to add a bit more, just to add to the sort of imagery. I think that works well.
Was this a tribute to somebody that has served in the military?
Not specifically, no. Yeah, I didn't have anybody in mind. I think kind of I've been lucky that there isn't really anyone in my family who I've lost to war. It was just a little bit more of a general sort of how I was feeling when I was writing it, really. But nobody specific.
It seems like it is, because there's tremendous imagery and passion and absolute love of song.
Oh, thank you.
So we're going to listen to Come Back Home, which was released this February by Echo Violet.
How does it does it feel being alone without a gun in your hand, my friend? This is no dream, they are deceiving you. Close your
So both songs that we have listened to so far are going to be on your upcoming EP?
That's right. Yeah, both of these are, yeah.
Do we expect more releases towards this, or are you going to be dropping an EP, a full EP shortly?
We've got another single coming out on the 21st of March, so just under 4 weeks away, called The End of What We Knew. Which is a bit more of a sort of modern rock song, isn't it, James?
Yeah.
And then about a month after that, we'll be dropping the EP, which includes another new song. So there'll be 5 songs on the EP, 1 song in that EP, which will be a new one within the EP. And that song is called Falling Light, which is, I think, the first song we wrote as a band.
It was, yeah.
But it's slowly being developed over time, the more we've been playing it. So that'll be the newest song within the EP.
That's one of those examples of you write a song, and then you go and play it, rehearse it, and gig it, and then you think, actually, there are things that we can do to this. There are things that we've come up with sort of on the fly when we've when we've rehearsed it, and thought, actually, we could go back to the studio version and improve it further. So I think that's where we are with that one. We're just making some further tweaks to it.
So our discussions, it seems that the songs that you put out, are there a collaborative effort between both you and James, Rowan?
Yeah, I mean, it's the way we work. The way we used to work is starting to change to how we're coming up with newer songs that we're bringing out this year, whereas the old songs came from ideas that me and James had pre-starting the band, really. A couple of our songs came whilst we're in the band, but usually what we do is one of us may have an idea of a song. For me, I'm more of a composer. I don't really focus on lyrics or vocal melodies. So, for example, City of Impunity, that was pretty much a full demo I had instrumentally, which I sent to James for him to listen to. And then we're on that track, for example, what we'll do is we'll go, I think we should change this bit, or change the structure of it, And obviously, once James starts getting his head around what he wants to put on vocally, that can change the dynamics of the songs a lot. So sometimes the song ideas can change quite a lot once James starts putting his vocals on, because that gives you more direction as to where the song's going. But then some ideas like Come Back Home, that was pretty much a full idea James had on as an acoustic demo, and we were just really adding layers to it and tweaking the structure a little bit. But most recently, for the songs off the EP that's coming out are really our sort of first songs we started writing together as a band. And after the EP, it's more our newer songs, obviously, because they're new releases. But what we're doing with the new songs is me and James and the band, we're getting together and just coming up with whatever comes to us at that moment, which I would say has more of an input, has more of a mixed input from everyone. So that's the way we're writing the newer material.
Yeah. That's I think in a way it's sort of becoming a little bit less ideas that somebody might have had previously, and I think it's becoming a little bit more organic in the way that we might improv sort of jam together a little bit more with the recent songs. But it's obviously that has its complications at the moment with the COVID situation, but yeah, we're still being able to do that to a certain degree.
Awesome. Well, your music has evolved. Like these two new tracks are remarkably different than your 2019 release, Why Can't I, which I believe is your debut release. Do you feel that way as a band, that it's different?
Yeah, I think
definitely, yeah.
Definitely, yeah. I think it's partly just us finding our feet a little bit more as a sort of songwriting team, I guess.
Yes. We've never said that we want to write in one specific genre and put ourselves in a box, so to speak. We like the idea of being open to writing whatever ideas we like. So that's why I'd say each song is a little bit different in terms of its style and genre, but we're also, as James says, we are finding our sound, and that's becoming more clear as to what direction we want to go down the more songs we're writing as a band.
Yeah, and as like a sort of proof of that, we originally, after we released the first track, Hint, we then this sort of because that had a bit more of an indie vibe. Mm-hmm. At the time, we sort of then labelled ourselves as an indie band at the very start. But then, quite quickly, as the sort of following songs emerged, they don't really fit the indie, what you might call a trademark indie sound, do they? They're more what I'd call alternative rock. So we've changed our tack a little bit in terms of how we describe ourselves. So I think we just generally call ourselves an alternative rock band. But we'll see how it changes. You know, we'll see how it evolves further with after the EP, and we get to we've got some songs which we're working on, which will obviously become the album eventually. So I think it's very much a case of just see where we evolve, which is, I think, is exciting. And yeah. I like that because I'm not one who I tend to like albums and artists who, when they release an album, there's a lot of songs are very, I don't like hearing songs that are too similar. I like quite a varied input in terms of our output. So I'm quite happy with the fact that they all sound quite different.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. And that's one of the reasons why your band came to my attention. Also, I've read in the media reviews that you have gotten, not the label, but it have been said that you're genre busting, that it can't be defined. There are a couple of reviews out there that have said the exact same thing you're saying, they are saying it about your music, which is really
cool. That is true.
It's really
good. Yeah. it's nice to hear.
So is there anything, any collaborations that...
In terms of collaborations, obviously we did the music video with Sleep All Day Productions. So I think for me, in terms of collaborations, it would be more... the thing that I'd really like to work on is getting some music videos which look and are of a higher budget than what we've been able to do so far. So I think for me, moving forwards, I think it would be I'd really like to collaborate with somebody who makes really professional music videos. I think that'd be great, as long as we have the budget for it.
Yeah, well, we're currently applying for there's some local funding that's available to bands, which we're applying for at the moment, which if we get, hopefully we'll be making some really professional music videos for the two new singles that we're currently recording for release after the EP. So that'd be a really good collaborative project.
That'd be awesome. So, like a full video with the band playing.
I'd quite like to do some more conceptual stuff as well. Like, for example, an idea I had with that would be, just to give it some perspective, was with Come Back Home, the idea of having a music video where it's all really professionally produced, where, you know, somebody could be dressed as a soldier walking through the woods, that kind of thing, and then... There's something, it might then cut to some explosions or something that really tells a narrative. I think that's what I would quite like, to work with someone who can sort of make a narrative, a compelling narrative within the video. I think that would do well.
Yeah, Come Back Home is quite cinematic in its sound, so it would be good for like a cinematic kind of music video, definitely. Would love to do that, yeah.
Fabulous. And so we look forward to hearing the full EP this year.
Oh, thank you.
That would be awesome. What channel is best to follow Echo Violet on?
I would say if you want to follow the band and support us, following us on our Facebook, on Spotify, and our YouTube would be our three main ones. That'd be great. And if you want to go that extra step, to support us, you could purchase our singles, which are on Bandcamp. That'd be amazing. Thank you.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you, Rowan and James, for joining us to talk about your band, Echo Violet. You guys are putting out astounding music. I love it. And I really had fun with the podcast.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's been really nice to talk to you. And it's really great what you're doing. We're really... appreciate what you do.
Thanks. I love doing it. It's my passion. So thank you so much. I hope to have you back.
Yeah. Thank you very much. It's been our pleasure.
Well, thank you all for tuning in. Next episode, we have indie artist Evan Adams of the Heavy Bird Project showcasing his incredible new album release, which happens to be the day of the show, March 19th. So catch you at the pod March 19th, on air indie, from my pad to yours over the airwaves. Subscribe feeds at thebuzzerpod.com. Cheers.